This is a HeadGum Podcast.
This level of foolishness and joy.
Losers, in other words.
Now watch this drive.
Great ass!
Hey, damn it.
Shisha.
Sicario.
Fucking Springsteen.
Damn it.
A little bit of Monica in
wow,
my life.
People are gonna die.
Yeah, baby.
His name, amen.
Hoo-ah! 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 Hoo-ah!
Kevin getting Pacino pilled.
Welcome to Good Christian Fun. I'm Kevin.
I'm Caroline.
And we're to have Good Christian Fun. You knew that was Pacino? You could tell?
Yeah, I live with Nathan Ealy.
That's a fair point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How's it going with you two?
With me and
you
Nathan?
You and the Sheens.
Well, we were texting today.
No, you and Pacino.
Oh, gosh. Well, I watched Jack and Jill finally last night, and he is in that as a supporting character, as himself.
Okay.
And he's very funny in
it. Has he done any musicals?
He does in that one. There's a song and dance number.
Dunkachino.
What's my name? Dunkachino. He has not done any straight musicals, no.
That's a shame.
I know. Get that guy in Dear Evan Hansen.
I feel like he would do a musical if Meryl got him to do it. She's well, like, listen, they let me sing.
They'll let you do anything if you're famous like we are. That's their on-set conversations on Angels in America, where I'm sure they chatted about all their, you know, all their time treading the boards. No, he's not a musical guy, but he loves Shakespeare. He's obsessed with Shakespeare.
Yeah.
He loves playing Shylock. He loves doing, you know, The Merchant of Venice. He's
okay.
Addicted to Billy Shakes. But is he addicted to Sondheim? Probably not as much.
Mm.
But maybe now is the time for him to start the second half of his career.
He needs a rebrand.
I'm still thinking about the idea of him doing Dear Evan Hansen. I like that.
He was in a play at the Pasadena Playhouse. Do you remember that?
Yes. China Doll? Or was that a different one?
Was it called China
There's
Doll?
There's a play he was in 2013 called China Doll by feels, David Mamet.
Like, see, that's what I'm talking about, the rebrand. Because that feels on brand for him, and that's not good.
How do you mean?
I don't know. Just don't love that sound of that. But I remember in the marketing materials for that play in Pasadena, he was always sitting down in the photos.
Yeah. Well, there are stories of people, this is real, doing the show China Doll. It's this David Mamet show post him going conservative, because David Mamet was a big, famous, fancy playwright. And then he went super right wing post 9/11, kind of like
weird.
Dennis Miller. And there were reports of like people wanting their money back after the play because Pacino would like forget his lines and clearly be reading off a teleprompter that they set up in the wings. And it was just like not a good
laying
theatrical
down on the set.
Checking his tags. I got a new follower. yeah, you're Al Pacino. You have a lot of followers. So, you know, I regret not being able to see him in that state. But man, what's another Pacino, and we're going to get to our guests in a second, but what's another Pacino movie we could do on the show? We did Angels in America.
Uh-huh.
We did Devil's Advocate. What fit? I mean, we did say this on Patreon, we're going to do a Heaven is for Real's audio commentary of The Irishman.
Oh, The Irishman. Yeah,
the 3-hour and 45-minute movie.
A two-part podcast.
No, one part, and you can't leave your seat.
No.
Why?
Quit.
Because then it would mess up the audio commentary for people that sync it at home, you know. But, you know, other movies with similar, like, spiritual themes. We got to find something of his,
yeah.
You know.
We did the Keanu one. Was that Pacino?
That's Devil's Advocate.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We did that a year or two ago. With
Maybe our guest has an idea.
I
can see the thoughts brewing in his mind.
Maybe Al Pacino joins the MCU and he's the new Magneto.
Finally. Now, listen.
Or the new Xavier. Yeah, I'm listening. What's up?
That sounds good. I'm listening.
We are here to talk about X-Men, one episode of the animated X-Men series from the 1990s, an episode called Nightcrawler that was heavily influential for a lot of people, including a very special guest who we need to introduce right now. Thank God that played when I clicked it, because that has not been happening for me lately. Friends and folks, he's a writer. You may know him from his Substack, The Cluster Hug. Give it up for Tyler Huckabee. Returning to the show.
Well, it's so good to be back. No other podcast that I've been a part of ever has a like intro that gets me as jazzed as you guys do about being a part of it. The drop is like so, I can't live up to the drop. Like I can't, like nothing that I have, like that was the high watermark of this episode, and my, at least of my contribution to it. So I get like, I get so excited about myself, and then I'm like, I've got nothing. I'm just a guy. I can't.
Well, yeah,
the Twyla needle drop just doesn't do me just, like, I don't
He's
do it
just
justice.
Tyler.
Yeah.
She's Caroline. He's just Tyler. I mean, we do try to structure this podcast kind of like Up, where everyone remembers the first 10 minutes in the beginning of Up and really loves that part. And then the rest of it was like,
mission accomplished.
There was a dog.
A dog flew a plane. Let's get you to bed, Grandma. It's time. Gracious for that final sweet slumber. Welcome back, buddy.
It's good to be back. No, it's really good to be here. It's been, I think the last time that I made an appearance on this podcast was, Caroline, I don't even think you were here because me and Kevin, you were gone or something. You were on leave.
When the Caroline's away, the boys don't
play. The boys play.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you do.
That's
right.
We had the Bruce podcast,
which was so sad. I missed that.
You didn't listen to it, did you?
Oh, I listened to it 5 times. It was
What were my, if you're a true fan of that episode, name 3 Bruce Springsteen songs that I mentioned. I don't even remember.
Yeah, you were like, American Jeans.
yep.
My favorite is Bruce
It's Pizza
song,
Factory Night.
Pizza Factory? Wait, not even Spaghetti Factory.
And
Pizza Factory.
Let's Be Nice to the Jews. I think that was the third song.
Let's be nice to the Jews. Wow.
That was his awareness song.
Incredible memory.
And every artist has
like social commentary. That's when, when Bruce really gets into the issues. That's when he really his sweet spot is.
I know.
Is Jewish advocacy.
In a way, American Skin is sort of that song. The song he wrote.
Really getting into it. I guess that's true. Yeah.
23
yeah, yeah.
years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, that was about one incident, but that's about prejudice. And racism the world around.
That was the sequel to the
song. Guess what, Caroline? You were trying to dunk on it, and he beat you to the punch.
No,
I bet you feel silly.
I do.
Yeah, do you feel bad?
Egg on my face.
Do you have something to say to me and Tyler?
I'm so sorry. I don't know why I ever made fun of that.
And by the way, American Jeans rips. Like your jeans rip, actually.
Wait, is that a real song?
American. No.
American.
No. He only has one American song. He has American Skin, right? I think that's it.
Only one song with American
title.
Yeah.
American blank. Yeah.
Well, hang on. That's more of a movie device.
I think
it's like,
so.
If you want your movie to sound really sort of prestige and highfalutin, any noun and put the adjective American in front of it.
American History X.
American Hustle. American Beauty. American
Horror Story. You know, that's how you know that's really good. The
prestige.
Really good stuff is American Horror Story.
American
Speaking
Fiction.
Of inclusive, accepting content.
Ooh, yeah.
The American Horror Story franchise with Ryan Murphy.
You
famously,
don't follow any of that
all
stuff,
are welcome
though,
here.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, it's so scary. That show is terrifying. I tried to watch it one time and I was like about to throw up. Have you guys ever watched it?
Yeah, I watched all seasons 1 through 3.
You
I
did?
I sure as much
did.
As I've, I think that's as far as I got into it too. I'm not really a Ryan Murphy guy. I've tried, but I'm not, he, I'm
Sometimes
not
it
the
works.
Target audience for him.
Yeah.
I think he's like Tyler Perry for white people. I think I've seen someone call him that. Where it's like, this isn't good, but you're sure making a lot of it.
Scratching some kind of itch.
You know, there's a lot of religious themes. I'm more of a Jessica Lange man. than anything else. And
oh, that's true.
I mean,
yeah,
it was sort of for a few years. American Horror Story was the halfway house for my demographic of actress to go to. Kathy Bates, Jessica Lange, sure. people of that ilk would go on the show. Connie Britton, they'd go on the show and have Angela Bassett was on there famously, and she did a lot of things. You know, so
Emma Roberts.
Emma Roberts. Ooh.
Well,
woo. Yeah. Emma Roberts. What do you got? Okay, here's speaking of other tweets I saw. I saw one today, Caroline. I want your take, and I want to bring you into this conversation. And you know, we're in the midst of this right now, and we don't know anything, so don't sue us for defamation or libel. Anyone?
Don't sue us.
Please don't. We can't. We literally can't afford it. I saw a tweet that said, Joe Jonas seems like the kind of evil that specifically only guys who are raised super Christian are.
That's
in reference to sort of the brouhaha, the very ugly back and forth,
right.
The public divorce, the suing, the lawsuits, the children.
There's breaking news like every single day of this divorce. It's crazy.
But how is this about our podcast?
I'm a little removed from that. Yeah. I'm a little removed from that. So my understanding is that the Game of Thrones girl, what's her name? I'm sorry.
Sophie Turner.
Sophie Turner has left Joe Jonas, and now there's kind of an ugly custody situation going on. Is that right?
Yeah, it was
on our limited intel.
Yeah, well, they Joe started feeding stories to TMZ that Sophie's like an absent mother. Then the divorce announcement happened. Then they issued a joint statement of like, we have mutually decided the divorce, et cetera. Then Sophie went to dinner with Taylor Swift. Mark that. And then the next day, Sophie, and they are shot and, you know, photos together. Then the next day, Sophie, this is today actually, as of recording, filed a lawsuit against Joe saying that they had agreed all their kids would live in England with her when she's done filming. He's like taken their passports and is like basically holding them hostage, and that she found out about the divorce in TMZ with everybody else.
And to me,
crazy.
I think we can all agree this is just the inevitability of what happens when you take your promise ring off. And all of this happened because he didn't keep his promise ring on that said true love waits. And it all could have been avoided if he had stayed the straight and narrow path.
All that fornication.
That he was walking that one time that I saw him outside of Chipotle on Sunset and Vine after church. That
and
we
he
both
didn't
went
listen to.
To
you.
He did.
When you called out to him.
He was like, hey.
You tried to give him some accountability.
I'm one of you. You're one of me. They're from Texas, too. So the list of parallels go on, right?
Right.
I think so.
Small town, little Texas.
Yeah.
Oh. There's no smaller town than the state of Texas in America.
It's kind of the biggest collectively small town we've got in the U.S.
Is.
Like, no matter how big a city in Texas gets, it's still kind of a small town, right?
Oh,
that's my understanding as a non-Texan. You know, with all due respect to the people of Texas, I haven't spent a whole lot of time there, but it does seem like they really pride themselves on being the like outsider, the like little town. Like we're just a bunch of like, we don't really get what the big fancy city people are doing, even if they live in Dallas or something, Houston or something like that. Am
They're
I
like,
right?
We're a bunch of little rascals, you know?
Yeah.
It's like you guys live there all your lives. You just know the people
yeah,
we're
so picking up
well.
On the vibe.
Gracious.
No, the Joe Bros, I care. Like they were homeschooled, so I feel a lot of solidarity with them there. I never really listened to them, but it was hard not to root for them until it was. And then I kind of had to, with goodwill and all the graciousness I have, kind of let them go on their own journey, which feels at this point pretty separate from the collective homeschool community at large.
It's hard when one of your own turns their back on you.
Yeah.
But you did gain Olivia Rodrigo. Did you know that?
She's a homeschooler. She was kind of like homeschooled, right?
And there's a song on her new album called Ballad of the Homeschool Girl,
which
I guess.
Was excited about, but it's derogatory. Like I thought it was going
to
be a presentation
you
and then
the
it ended up being
of
about how I really thought it was going to be about like how much fun it is to be a homeschooler, but it was actually about.
Once again, Olivia disappoints.
Slander.
Well, her.
I was pretty. I thought it was going to be huge for the community, and
because you're still pro homeschool, you're like this. Listen,
I just want to see. It's just nice to see yourself in media.
Yeah.
And until it's not. But
that's the thing. I mean, Billie Eilish was a homeschool kid too, right?
I feel like it doesn't count if the celebrity is homeschooled because they became famous when they were literally a teenager.
Yeah.
Like if they were homeschooled and then got famous when they were like 20, 21 and weren't living on sets their whole childhood.
I see. Yeah.
Like that feels like a very different homeschooler than like you two.
Cause I wouldn't be, hey, woo. I wouldn't claim like, yeah, Maude Apatow is one of us, you know, for example.
Exactly. It's true. Like there's celebrity homeschoolers who are a celebrity by necessity because they're too busy on set to go to like normal person school. And then there's people like Kevin and I, and we're the real ones. We really like,
you were just exercising your freedom of choice.
I love Billy, and I'm not trying to create some sort of, I'm not trying to gatekeep the homeschool community. This isn't a crazy purity
all
test.
Welcome.
But she's not, but she's like kind of in it, but not of it. Does that make sense?
Is she still in school? Like, is she still in high school technically?
Yeah, she's 15, right?
Wait, hold on.
No, she's like 20.
She is my concept of a young person. Yeah, she is at this point.
She's the youngest person that exists.
What you're striking on, Caroline, is like the distinction between Christian bands that are like, we're a Christian band, versus like a Switchfoot that's like, we're a band.
Yeah.
We just happen to be Christian. Yeah. And these are all people that happen to be homeschooled.
Exactly.
And that's not real.
And Billy is 21, so she should be out of high school. Unless she's on a really long independent study program.
She had a gap
year. When you're homeschooled, it's, you graduate when mom and dad say you graduate. It doesn't really.
You take your time.
I saw Billie Eilish at the Hollywood Bowl, and she was raising money for her crew mission trip. In between, they just stopped the set. And she was just fundraising.
They did a car wash?
For a long time. It was odd. Gracious. So, yeah, shouts out, thoughts and prayers to all the homeschool and past and present
future. We're
all
going through it right now.
It feels like the brand is taking a hit, though.
I'm sorry. Was the brand ever strong?
It was. It was. It was at least under the radar.
No, I'm not.
It was under the radar.
You were unbothered before.
Well, here's what it was, too.
You were unknown.
Is you know, we all, most people think 2020 was a bad year for most of us. But the thing that was maybe interesting about it for people like Tyler and I.
This is a good point.
Is that, hey, now you're all.
Yeah.
Welcome to my world.
Yeah.
You're all a part of
welcome
the community.
Welcome to hell.
I'm not trapped in here with you. You're trapped
in here. Oh, my God.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
That's right. I've been, I don't know why, but TikTok keeps serving me these videos of teachers talking about what's going on in schools this year
and
last year.
Oh, I saw a very depressing one today.
Yeah, and they're like, the kids are not okay. They're like all misbehaving, and like the principal's office literally can't hold 70 children who are all like, you know, have surpassed steps 1, 2, and 3 of consequences. So like they're just a mess after what they went through, and that's homeschool's effect on the community.
not a worldwide pandemic. It's homeschool's effect, particularly.
I mean, you draw a line. They're reading at, you know, a kindergarten level at and 12th grade and everything.
Hey, wait a minute.
It kind of reminds me of someone I know.
All right. Now, just because I never technically took an English class after the 8th grade doesn't mean I don't know how to read. I've been reading that Jesus and John Wayne book for the last 3 years.
Yeah, you're dedicated to books in a way most people aren't. You'll read them for years and years. You are a published author, though.
I got to chapter 4. What's
in
that?
In a real newspaper, so that does count.
Oh, that's true. The real newspaper Caroline's referring to is
the Washington
My
Post.
Letterbox. Oh.
Oh,
that's right.
That was a huge moment for the homeschool
community. That
was huge. Community.
That was a cultural
year.
They didn't claim you when that was
published. You shook the foundations of culture.
That's weird.
Weren't you published there as well, Tyler?
In the Washington Post?
I got
a byline there.
Hey.
I got a couple bylines there.
What about, so they just hand those out like candy?
Hey, wait a minute. The disgraced Washington Post.
The failing Post. The failing WAPA.
Did you see that? Rodrigo, speaking of her, and then we'll close the Rodrigo loop. She does have a Letterboxd, and she is active on it.
Oh, yeah. Is
she
good?
How's your taste? Does she have interesting? Did she watch?
I mean, it's a Finsta, so it's not.
Oh, we don't know what
it's like. What Margot Robbie's was before people found that, because she was on it for a while under the radar. But no, I want her to enjoy her life and make those lists that no one else can see.
I'm rooting for her. Despite the slight to the homeschool community, you know, if nothing we're a community of second chances.
You are. You're a forgiving group.
I'd like to.
You have no choice.
Famously.
Hey, you have no choice.
You can't be isolated any further. You need to welcome everyone you can.
It's pretty wide. It's a pretty big tent.
This is a different dynamic than what usually happens on the podcast, where it's like, you know, I kind of have hit me energy, and then the guests and Caroline end up sort of.
And Dexter.
Yeah, dunking on my ass, and Dexter dunks on my ass as well. This is interesting, where it's like, there's more of us than there are of you, but it feels like you are higher in the power dynamic.
Exactly. I have the strength of many.
I know the food chain.
Yeah.
Barack Hussein Obama's education behind you. Wait, what year did you graduate high school?
2009.
2009. Okay. So it was Obama's first term. Wow.
Terrible year.
I was 06. So it was Pres Bush years for sure. Hurricane Katrina just happened.
You guys had something to look forward to.
Yeah, we sure did. Years of economic prosperity.
There's that homeschool education.
Damn it. It's so easy. It's so easy. We watched that. Do you remember that, Caroline? A year and a half ago, we watched that God's Not Dead. That was specifically about how homeschooling is under attack in the country.
Yes.
It was the courtroom drama one. And
it's not the first one. It's one of the latter, the late stage.
Yes.
The franchise really fell off a cliff after the first one.
It did. I thought so, too. It was like after that first Predator movie, Predator 2, Predators, The Predator. I don't need it.
I'm a
God's Not Dead number one purist. I'm Pureflix. Oh, thank you, Dexter. Well, Tyler, what's up with you? What's new?
Nice.
A seamless transition. Well,
it is an honor to be back on this podcast. One of, you know, I don't play favorites, and I don't know if this is like you should say this or not, but one of my favorite podcasts, you know, always is like so much fun to be here with you guys. And I don't mean this is a slight to any other podcast, but when I get a text from Kevin about joining, I'm like, clear my schedule. I say to myself that it is
so
time.
Nice.
We gotta jump on here. So the cabinet. Things are good. I think since last time I was on, I've been to France. My two dogs just showed up here. I just got a second dog. This is now a two dog household, so that's exciting. We've had Willie for a long time, and now Ozzy is also a part of my life here.
They've got all that space.
Me and my wife brought Ozzy in, so that's pretty exciting.
Ozzy, is he named after anyone in particular, like famous Christian Ozzy Osbourne?
Ozzy,
excuse me.
That's okay. That's fine.
Like Ozzy and Harriet.
Her name might be a problematic thing, and I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be canceled from good Christian fun.
Oh no.
But she is so skinny. She is like she's all bones. And so Ozzy is short for Ozempic, and that is just that's how she got her name.
No, you won't be canceled. We just got, I meant to tell you, Caroline.
You should have named her Caroline.
We got an email from HeadGum, and we actually just secured the Ozempic mid-rolls for all of Q4.
Okay, that's great.
Finally, we can get our stash. Start Dexter
Providence.
On it next week.
Providence.
Gracious. I know, the last time you were on the main show, because that was my last memory, is we talked with you. Isn't it funny? You've done this podcast like 5 times and never in person. Is that crazy to think about?
That is true. Yeah, I mean, most of your people, since I've last been on here, Kevin, you and I actually met in person when I was out in California. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. That was lovely.
We had a great time, and Caroline, I don't know where you were.
I don't know where I was.
You weren't invited.
conveniently out of town. Yeah, you only exist on a screen to me, Tyler.
I know, but
ways.
It is good. But I feel like things are different now. We've entered kind of a new era of our friendship.
Yeah.
Aww.
And so yeah, things are really good.
I do feel like if Caroline met you in person, she would say, "Hi, I'm Caroline. So nice to meet you."
Hey.
As has been the history
Don't bring this up. I'm
You've
embarrassed.
Talked about it on the show.
So embarrassing.
There's been a few people we've had on the show that she's introduced.
You've introduced yourself to.
I feel so bad.
I don't think that would happen with me. I don't think so, Caroline.
Not after five or six times.
After this time, I think I'll finally
This is the one that clinched it.
We crossed the Rubicon.
This was memorable.
This is very exciting.
Oh, I did have a real question. I did have a real question. Last time you were on the show, by the way, we talked about, this was like two years ago. We talked about Julian Baker. Which you and I kind of geeked out about, and Caroline said, "Not for me," once again. Which is fair. But I was going to say, I think since the last time you were on the main show, you stopped working, writing full-time for Relevant, started doing your Substack, and kind of following your own thing, and paddling your own canoe. Do you feel like the fact that like now that you're not writing within an infrastructure where it's like, well, we have these interests and this does well on the website and blah, blah, blah. Now that you're not like having to serve that with everything that you're doing writing wise, that you're thinking about things differently. Like, how do you feel like your writing's changed now? It's like, I can write about literally anything I'm interested in and just like push it out to everybody.
Yeah, I do. I do think it's changed. I think I had been there for a long time and built up a lot of things that I kind of wanted to, that I was interested in writing about, interested in exploring through writing, but Relevant just wasn't the platform. You know, Relevant has its beat, and either I knew that just wasn't really, Relevant wasn't really the place for that, or sometimes was told like, Tyler, nobody's interested about this weird interest of yours. this is not our audience thing. Through my Substack, I do think I've been able to explore a lot of new things and some new types of writing and some new areas that I probably didn't get to do as much through Relevant, which is very, very gratifying. But I think that you can still see, I don't think it's like been a dramatic shift in it, or like a hugely dramatic shift. It wasn't like a BCAD situation. I think people who've followed my career at Relevant probably can still tell that it's me when I'm writing on Substack. Maybe just because I get a little more, there's maybe like some things that I feel able to explore, mostly in the, like nothing super serious, mostly like honestly fun stuff that I'm like, this is something I'm kind of interested in, or this is a band or a movie or something like that, that I wasn't able to explore or Relevant didn't really have a spot for that I can do now. And that is really fun and really enjoyable. And sometimes it is, I feel like people who have followed me for a while are maybe a little mystified by this isn't really why Substack is hard because you don't know why people are following you. Like when people subscribe to Substack, what are they expecting? Are they expecting like just me as a person to write what I'm interested in? Or do they think I have a certain beat? In the same way that they would if they followed like Teen Vogue on Twitter or something like that. Are the curveballs interesting for them? Are people following me for like kind of like progressive Christian talk, or are they following me for like nostalgic CCM stuff? You guys probably feel this way too sometimes in the subjects that you pick up for good Christian fun. Like today's episode, subject of today's episode, by the way, could be a little bit of a left turn for some people, but I'm kind of hoping that by now most people who follow me at least trust me enough to be like, all right, I don't know why we're writing about this, but I'm willing to, I'll give it a couple of paragraphs and see how it goes.
It's just like Sully, we know he's going to land the plane.
Well,
145 souls on that flight.
The only lives lost were the geese.
Yeah. And he wished he'd have done it in July. I mean, there are pieces, and I've subscribed from the beginning to your Substack.
It's essential reading for a GCF host.
I think Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Which is us saying, that's huge. I'm going to put that on.
Yeah, we reference and crib it often. Yeah.
That is
your take. Actually, true. Take them. Take them. That's great.
I don't know
that
if Substack
great.
Needs blurbs, but we'll do that.
I would love. I love it. I'll tell. I'll just bring it up with friends.
Have you ever given a blurb? By the way, it's so fun.
I have not. I have been asked to give a blurb, but I have not.
And you've
not actually done it. Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
A blurb denier. He denied the blurb, George.
Well, the blurb economy now is kind of like under scrutiny, and people are like, "Oh, I didn't actually read the book,"
or
I was like, "I don't really want to be one of those guys."
Oh God, what was the Gospel Coalition thing where that was the whole deal?
Yeah, that guy, that whole thing, and this was well before that, but that was a bunch of like Christian pastor guys blurbed this book on sex, and the book came out and it was like, it was psycho shit.
No.
And a lot of the pastors were like,
I didn't actually,
a few guys said truthfully or not, but I kind of think I would suspect they were being honest. They're like, I didn't end up reading the book at all. I just said, I liked the book I don't need that on my conscience.
But yes, yours is one of the only Substacks I actually read when I get it. I'm subscribed to like 20.
Whoa.
And yours is
that
one of
lot.
The
thank
two.
You
oh, yeah.
The piece that. On why Taylor Swift is this generation's Bruce Springsteen.
That was for the real Bruce heads.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Kevin had to like recover after reading that article for a few days.
Well, you know what's funny? I mean, because
I think we texted about this.
Because
we both went to the Eras tour, and we both left.
Did.
I think pretty impressed. You were there too.
Oh, wow.
Did you see?
Yeah.
We had a good time. Yeah, and you can say what you texted me. I don't want to like put words in your mouth or anything, but you were like, "It's one of the few shows I've seen that was on the Springsteen level, right?"
Yep. Mm-hmm. Like one of the only ones. Everyone else is like,
No.
I can't think of. Maybe Arcade Fire, the disgraced Arcade Fire, would compare, but
we're not endorsing their behavior.
Not now or their new album. Even before,
it's been a while.
Like, when all that really unsavory news came out, I was like, well, the new album was bad. So I was like, okay, well,
it's your old meme about how like I was never into them anyway.
Oh, yeah. I never actually liked
them. I always knew.
Candidly. Truthfully.
Aw.
Oh, gracious.
Bye, Ozzy.
Very well.
Yeah. Yeah, I get you.
No. Do you feel
doing
the Substack has changed the way that you receive feedback from people? Do people feel like more of a direct line to you now to talk about some of this stuff?
Yeah, I think so. I think that there is sort of a... when you're writing for under a masthead for a company, that's almost a shield. If you say something that people don't like or get mad at, you can just kind of hand wave it away as like, well, that
oh,
was,
sure.
You know, my name maybe was on it, but that's not really how I actually feel, which I don't think I hope I did never have to like kind of take the coward's way out from a take. I've been pretty lucky. I've never had like a big cancel moment. Like people have gotten mad sometimes, but it's never been a thing yet.
You've never
someday.
Had to be like, sorry, that wasn't me. That was Jonathan Relevant. Take
never
it up
had
with
to
old.
Do that. Yeah, I never had to do. I never had to do like the video. I never had to do the Ashton Kutcher Mila Kunis. I never had to be like, guys,
well,
the last few days have been
crossed.
The hardest.
Hope to God none of us ever have to do the Ashton Kutcher Mila Kunis.
I mean, you say it, knock on wood, man. I feel like, you know, it could come
only
for all of us.
Line
and
me
honestly,
up on a wall
when it
like
comes,
that if you have a gun.
I'm going to embrace it. That's going to be my cue that it's time to get off social media. Yeah, I'm going to, or maybe just double down and enter my Ben Shapiro era. Go full into the like, well, if the woke left is going to cancel me, then they don't deserve me. And enter my free speech is
hell yeah.
Like, and
God's
then that's
country.
My ticket. That is my ticket out of here. That's going to be, I'm on easy street from
you
there.
You can retire early.
I'm gonna Airbnb a lavish mansion to record the apology video at, so it does not look humble at
from the pool.
Right. Yeah, on a pool floaty.
That's right.
With the martini,
it will be like a Cribs / apology video. What's up, guys? Welcome. Also, this isn't who I am. This doesn't reflect me. Gracious. Well, we could talk to you about this all day, but we need to talk about some X-Men. So let's take a quick break and we'll be right back with more good Christian fun.
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Auraframes.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Auraframe.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Auraframes are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Auraframe, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome back to Good Christian Fun. It's time to dive into the topic. Come on, let's go. Do you think Stephen Curtis Chapman ever watched X-Men? Do you think he would have enjoyed that?
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, sure. I don't know.
You know, I remember the other day that he's weirdly the voice of Baloo in that Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers movie with Andy Samberg.
That's great.
Why did that happen?
I love that. I love that factoid. I don't know how it happened.
It's inexplicable to me.
It is. He's not a crossover name.
No.
No, it didn't launch like a voice acting career of any kind. To my knowledge, he has voiced Baloo the Bear, and that's it.
Yeah.
That's the extent of his voice acting career. And also, he's Stephen Curtis Chapman. It's so great. It's great.
Why did that happen?
And he doesn't have young kids. Like sometimes that's why celebrities do it. You know?
He has older kids now, probably.
But they do it for my 4-year-old.
Would we call him a celebrity? Like he's more famous than me.
Yeah.
He's more famous than you.
That's a generous term.
He's more famous than me.
Yeah.
Is he more famous than Caroline? I don't know.
I don't know. We might be on.
That's a high bar. But I do love. He seems like he's really proud of.
Being
the voice of Baloo, and I really love that for him. I have nothing but goodwill.
Wait, what did
Stephen
he say
Curtis,
about it? Does he just
Stephen
like
Curtis?
Talk about it a
There's
lot?
There's like a TikTok or something where he's like kind of like freaking out when he's watching that Chip and Dale.
Oh yeah.
Who wouldn't? I would
so
if
cute.
I was in that movie. That's how I would lead every conversation.
He's like, "Hey guys, I'm Baloo. Can you believe it? No, here it is.
Oh,
it's on his Facebook."
Baloo, nice to meet you. Man, that guy sounds familiar. Baloo!
Very sweet.
Stoked.
It's very sweet.
Baloo. We bought a Baloo. But we're not talking about the animated property. We're talking about freaking X-Men. Okay. Mm-hmm. Wow. I mean, we do have so little time to cover so much here today. As far as X-Men go, because you, this is your ballywick. This is your field as much as we
This
joke,
is pretty much my, yeah, this would be my
identity.
Field of expertise. Yeah, pretty, like, this is my field of expertise.
I feel like, Caroline, you've really shied away from the, how would you call it, the Marvel descriptors about yourself in the last, pretty much post-Endgame, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like, this isn't.
Oh, yeah.
I remain open to it. Like, I'm always open to the new Marvel movies coming in and knocking my socks off. Like, I go see them.
Are you going to go see The Marvels with Brie Larson?
Yeah.
You will?
You know what? The Miss Marvel series I thought was really fun and
she'll
good.
Be in it.
And she's in it. Yeah. So literally that alone will get me into the theater. I'm sorry, Brie Larson. It won't be you.
But who said that playing with your food couldn't be fun? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I got the reference.
All right.
There's this tweet.
I do. Oh, go ahead. It's very funny.
Explaining a tweet on a podcast.
Yeah.
Her social media brand, I think there's just, I'll just say there's no one doing
it
like
her.
Oh, is
this like a caption of hers?
Yeah.
Okay.
She does it all. She does it on her own. She's in a class by herself.
She's making a silly face while eating food. She says, who says food can't be fun? I guess the answer is nobody.
You're right, Bree. You got me there.
I do feel the need to distinguish here at this point. When I talk about X-Men,
yeah.
I'm emphatically not talking about the movies, which I find to be a mixed bag at best.
Sure.
Like the movies didn't really do it for me. They have some highs and lows, but none of the highs are it. But the comic books
and all
were
the highs
a very
you attribute
big part.
To Bryan Singer and his work.
Exactly. Yeah. My hero. I haven't Googled him in a while. I'm gonna take a big sip of coffee right now and Google Bryan Singer and see what he's been up to.
But like the comics and then this show.
And then the animated
like
series when I was a kid were like extremely formative for me. Yeah. I started reading comics a lot. My dad gave me like his big comic collection when I was a kid. So I got very into like reading comics that were written in like the 70s and 80s, mostly before I was born. And that was kind of like my beginning of my journey with the X-Men. And the X-Men comics have been the ones that really continued with me up till now. Like, I still read those comic books when they come out on a monthly basis as a grown-up.
Can I give you my dumb guy's understanding of what X-Men is as someone who's only absorbed it via, like, the movies
and
whatnot?
I can't wait.
It's essentially, because it is a Marvel property, and it's essentially like a sort of allegory for marginalized people groups. This started in the 1960s.
That's a great you're on the right track.
I'm on the right path. What was that the origin, the formulation for it? Was that not like Stanley was like, I care about marginalized groups, let's make X-Men, you know. But maybe,
it
I don't
sort
know.
Sort of it found its footing a little bit over time. Stanley and Jack Kirby launched the X-Men in the early 60s along with like Spider-Man and Hulk and Iron Man, like in the same era as all of that. And it was one of their less successful, like Spider-Man was big, Fantastic Four was big, the Avengers were big. And then there was X-Men, which kind of like, it was not a banger out of the gates. And it got canceled like, I think 6 or 7 years after it fell off and wasn't talked about anymore until the 70s, I think, when it was rebooted, and that's when you get like Wolverine and Storm and kind of like the cool X-Men when people think of now. It was a way more international group, and this writer by the name of Chris Claremont started to build more of a social awareness into it where they're mutants, right? And they're like good mutants and bad mutants, and the good mutants kind of had this like Martin Luther King vibe to them, and the bad ones had this Malcolm X vibe to them, which was a very 1970s white guy understanding of obviously of like racial equality at the time. But even that got a little more complicated and nuanced in the ensuing years. So it'd be fair to say that, there's like and I think that's why it appealed to me a lot, because it wasn't like cops. It wasn't like the Avengers like showing up and telling everybody to calm down and sending the bad guys to jail. It was more about these groups trying to figure out their, you know, what does equality look like? What does justice look like? And the more convoluted the lines between who the good guys and bad guys were, the more interested in those I got, which in the comics got pretty complicated and sometimes you'd have X-Men on the good, on the hero side, be like, you know what, this Magneto guy is making a lot of sense, and maybe we should, maybe actually I'm on his side now. And that wasn't really condemned in the text. Like, that was seen as a very reasonable decision for them to make. And so they probably, as like a 12, 13 year old kid, that was probably instructive for me about like social justice issues in a way that a lot of the stuff I was actually reading in my homeschool education wasn't necessarily.
Right. Yeah, when like there's characters' existence is a crime, their relationship right. to crime or to violence or whatever is really a lot more interesting than, like you said, yes. the cops, which are just like, right. we enforce right. the law, and the law is neutral and good, and we all know that. So that's really cool. And that's funny that it wasn't until later that they were like, let's talk about this. We can bring this kind of real social story into the comic books and explain that.
Is it fair to say that it's like the movies that really emphasize that piece of it, like the allegorical marginalization piece of
it? I don't think so. No, I don't think so. I think it was there. And I think in some ways the movies were probably even more straightforward or simplistic about it than the comics would get sometimes. I think there are some good there's X-Men 2, the second one, has some pretty good moments where I think they kind of draw some parallels between a kid coming out as, quote unquote, coming out as a mutant to like an actual coming out experience for a queer kid that I think actually works pretty well and is pretty effective. But the comics got there before the movies did and have continued to develop those ideas. And like any allegory, it breaks down pretty fast, especially in a comic book world. I am not emphatically not saying that this was a perfect representation of that the mutants are great of like the queer experience or of the Black experience or anything right. like that. But there have been a lot of interesting writings and readings of like the queering of the X-Men or something like that, which have deepened my appreciation now for them as a grown-up in ways that I didn't see when I was a teenager reading them. And I think it's probably fair to say that it's helped. There's a big community out there of marginalized people who are fans of X-Men who kind of saw themselves in some of these characters. And that's helped me understand it a little better too. Just reading it as a person who has not been marginalized in any significant way, other than being homeschooled.
Homeschooled, which is a
horrifying world for you guys. Exactly. I mean, from your memory of the comic books, the X-Men, and I guess even the show before we get to the very episode we're about to talk about.
Yeah.
But how often was like religion talked about in those comic books, and like how often was it portrayed as like a good thing versus a bad thing?
Fairly often. Jewish identity is pretty important in the X-Men comics, both as an ethnicity and as a religious identifier. This is something that does not come through in the movies, but Magneto is very explicitly drawn as a Jewish character. I think in the movies you do see him as a Holocaust survivor.
Yeah, you see him at Auschwitz. Then he doesn't talk about it at all otherwise.
And then, they just drop it immediately. Like it's just kind of an inciting incident for him. But that is a very important part of his identity. And if people want to, there's Spencer Aukerman has done some really good writing about this at the Forever Wars site, and I would encourage people who are interested in this to go read more about this there. Outside of that, that's the big one, obviously. Other religions, there's some Muslim characters, one named Dust, and then Miss Marvel, Kamala Khan, who's going to be in the Marvels movie, was just turned into an X-Man in the comic books. I don't think the movies are going to go there. So those are two like significant Muslim characters. And then as far as Christian characters go, everything is sort of like vaguely coded Christian in pop culture. So you can make the argument that a lot of these people are like maybe like vaguely nominally Christian. But like Nightcrawler was the only one who was like very seriously identified as a very staunch, deeply religious character early on. And so that was part of the reason that as a kid, I was very attracted to him because I was used to seeing like people who weren't explicitly not Christian, and you could kind of read Christianity into them if you wanted to, because that's a lot of pop culture when you're a kid. But then you find this guy, Nightcrawler, who's like, he's like praying the rosary.
Quoting the Bible.
And he takes, he's like very, very serious about it. And as a kid, I was like a superhero who quotes Bible verses, like my mind exploded.
Yeah, that would have melted my brain.
If only you poor boys had known Bible Man when he was...
Man, yeah, that would have really melted my brain in a different way.
The ultimate. You want to see a 45-year-old
man?
That's
all I remember about Bible Man, him screaming in the rain.
Crying out.
Oh, Willie Garson, whatever his name was. Gracious. Yeah, so this is an episode of the animated series from the 90s. Season 4, episode 8, Nightcrawler, which they're bringing back. They're bringing this show back with most of the original voice cast next year.
Really?
On Disney Plus. And if anyone wants to watch it, you can watch on Disney Plus. Or you can watch a little compilation on YouTube called Wolverine is a Christian.
He is a Christian.
All the theological.
We can maybe return to that.
You would not see it coming. I'm surprised that they're bringing all the voices back because the voices in this show are crazy.
Hey. And this is 30 years ago. This is from 1995.
Hey, what you doing? Yeah. I gotta put something on more comfortable that.
So this is what I didn't remember from the movies. Are most of the X-Men from Down by the Bayou?
Or the Bronx?
they've got in this episode you've got Gambit, who's like a Cajun, and he is like this. Now the comics do, and it's very funny to read some of these comics because they will write the accents into the actual dialogue.
Oh, yeah.
So like the way that Rogue talks in this cartoon, it's like sugar, like they spell out it's instead of ER, it's AH. Yeah. It's bad. It's really, really hard to read sometimes because every character's dialect accent comes through very clearly just in the spelling of the letters.
Possible on all of them.
The premise for this episode is that a lot of the X-Men are on vacation, going skiing.
they got a break.
They took a little holiday.
They went to the German Alps.
They're skiing. One of them has an accent. Is it Gambit that has an accent?
Gambit has a Cajun. He's like from Louisiana.
Uh-huh.
And then you have Rogue, who's from the South, so she has a very Southern accent.
Oh, accident is what I meant to say. Say accident? An accent and an accident. One in
and
the
an
same.
Accident. Yeah, and they have some sort of like things go south.
They wipe out, and then a bunch of monks from a nearby town find them and bring them in to heal them. Mm-hmm. Which is when they meet Nightcrawler, the titular Nightcrawler, who everyone in the town is afraid of. And he's got an accent too. Is that Transylvanian? It was giving a little Dracula.
He has like a German, kind of like a German-ish accent.
Yeah.
And he looks like a demon. Like he's got like blue skin and there's no pupils in his eyes. And he has a horned tail. So he's one of the sometimes when you're a mutant in the X-Men, you're like, it's not that big of a deal. Like you mostly look like a normal person and you can passing, I guess you'd call it. But then some mutants it did not work out for them like that. And Nightcrawler is one of the ones who had a mutation that can't be hidden, which is why he goes to this monastery. He hangs out there because there are these like medieval Shrek-like band-like groups that are roving the countryside with torches and pitchforks.
They're hunting him down. They want to kill him. You see that in a little cold open of the episode. And so he's chilling in the monastery, and then one of the other monks messes with Gambit, and then Rogue chases him down. It's Nightcrawler himself, and then they get into like all the theology of like, no, I'm like, people are afraid of me. So I came and became a monk to find purpose. That's what I'm here to do.
Keep going. Yeah, you're good.
Oh, just he launches into like his whole theological perspective, and Wolverine has his counter to it. And it's genuinely like interesting.
They get pretty into it because Wolverine's very like, I don't believe in all that God stuff. Like he's a very he's a kind of a Richard Dawkins type figure in this, that he's Nightcrawler is extremely devout and he can't talk for more than three sentences without going full like doxology. We all believe that God loves us and has a plan for our lives. And Wolverine's like, shut up, y'all. Like it was as a kid when you're watching this, you didn't know this sort of stuff was allowed on TV, and it felt very strange to be going through it. But it's also kind of the conversation I actually find to be, even now when I go back to it, surprisingly layered in some of its, like, it gives like both Wolverine and Nightcrawler are given a pretty fair hearing on their sides, and Wolverine brings up like the problem of evil and why would God let people do like such terrible things to me, and Nightcrawler kind of acknowledges that's a really good question and that's a problem.
And like you can tell Wolverine has thought about this. He's not just a hater for hater's sake, and like I think it's implied too that Wolverine used to be a Christian or was raised in faith at some point. And so he like knows these arguments and has left it behind like for his own good reasons, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah. And we got a little clip of that conversation.
None likes to be reminded of our shared human weakness. My appearance does not make it easy.
Don't it make you crazy?
It did once. But then I found peace by devoting my life to God. He directed me to this place where they value the character of my heart, not my appearance.
What are you talking about? We're mutants. God gave up on us a long time ago.
No, my friend. God does not give up on his children, human or mutant.
He is
there for us in our times of joy and to help us when we are in pain. If
you're hurt,
we let him.
Don't give me that easy answer, garbage. I've tried. Don't you think I want that? I don't need a sermon from some circus boy preacher.
Looks like you touched a nerve.
I am sorry. I did not mean to upset him.
What was interesting to me about the episode, too, is that you get that perspective in it. You get Nightcrawler's more devout, compassionate perspective. But then you also get the perspective of the other monk, who's a little more extremist. In his perspective, he's more like, we need to cleanse and purify the monster of the evil, and then he ends up burning it alive. So it's not even this is a battle of faith versus not, or this is like a godless person versus a person of faith. It's more just like this is like within the umbrella of the same faith. There can be this much discord and division and like divergent ideology. Which I thought was interesting.
Like faith can be corrupted and a savior, you know.
There's gradients of devoutness and extremism throughout. Even in, like, then you have Rogue, who seems like she's kind of like on the fence here between the two. She's like not sure what she believes. And then Gambit, who is an unserious person. And I'm kind of a noted Gambit hater, so he can, as far as I'm concerned, he's an apostate, and that's fine by me.
He's a clown. Jeez. I like when they call him Gumbo.
His name should have been Gumbo. We got Rogue, we got Professor Xavier, Gumbo.
I was
Harpo.
Really struck when by the way, Nightcrawler seems like he's living in an 1800s village, but the X-Men are coming from like 1987 with their like little suits and everything. Very fun. But when Nightcrawler, at the beginning, you first kind of meet him, he's being chased by the villagers, like almost killed multiple times. Like they are trying to kill him and they almost catch him. And when he finally escapes, he's like out of breath and he's like, they know not what they do. And I was like, that's literally what Jesus said on the cross. I was like, that's kind of remarkable to me. One, to kind of suggest that Nightcrawler, I guess, has that level of martyrdom. But even the fact that like they made that kind of reference, it wasn't just a vague, like biblical, you know, message.
Kind of like vaguely religious. Yeah.
Yeah. Like we're going to bring this attitude in of his like level of compassion for the village people, despite like the violence they bring
and
to
all
the
great music they've brought us over the years.
whatever bad things the village people did,
that's how he's able to forgive.
We have to remember all that they gave us as well.
Forgiving our last president, his favorite song, Macho Man.
Nightcrawler was also a part of the circus for a long time, and I thought it was funny that like the circus wasn't his salvation, but the church was, even though he lived like most of his life at the circus before.
Which is interesting because most of us have the reverse trajectory where it's like, this church thing isn't doing it. I gotta go join the circus.
I gotta run away.
Gotta find a clown named Kevin.
Spend
my time with. Yeah.
Yeah, so Nightcrawler is very... And this, to be clear, this was your first exposure to the character was in the animated series? Or was it in the comics?
I don't know. I think that I had probably more or less simultaneously was like reading these comics, finding who Nightcrawler was in there, and also watching this animated series. I'm not sure which came first. And also, let's not forget the old arcade game that you'd used to... put a quarter in. You could play Nightcrawler in there, but there's not a whole lot of Catholic dogma in the video game, as I recall. So
no, there's actually a Catholic version of that you can buy, or like to get to the next level, you have to read 3 chapters of doxology.
You don't kill the bad guys, you just convert them to the church.
Well, because this is just like an entree to what's so reflected in the comics. In the little poking around I did where they really get into his whole deal over a bunch of different issues. At one point, correct me if I'm wrong, in some of the later issues, does he literally die and go to heaven for a little bit?
That he does, yeah. Okay. Which is most X-Men die at some point. That's not unusual. But
X-Men go on a short-term mission trip to Africa?
He definitely, that comes up a lot. He definitely goes to heaven, and then he like comes back because his, you know, his work isn't done on Earth yet. There's a point where the X-Men fight Dracula, and he's like the only one who Dracula fears because he's so pure of heart. That when, like, I think if I remember right, and
I want to become a Christian. I want
saved.
To drink the blood of Christ in communion. Things of that nature.
So he becomes very, it's like an ongoing thing with him. He's unlike a lot of there are other Catholics in comic, but like Daredevil is a Catholic, but Daredevil is very tortured by his Catholicism. He's very like, he's one of those kind of like always on the verge of lapsing Catholics. Whereas kind of like you see in the show, Nightcrawler is like, he's in, he's bought it hook, line, and sinker. There's not a whole lot. He never goes through, as far as I can tell, a deconstruction process, we might say.
You see Nightcrawler in some of the new issues, like, okay, I'm checking out this podcast, and it's liturgist, good Christian fun.
Maybe I should start my own.
Brought to you by Squarespace. He doesn't do that. He's pretty steady with it. And you've written about this before, both for the old website Relevant and then for your Substack. You interviewed the writer of episode.
I tracked down the writer of this episode. Oh, that was really fun. I forget what the circumstances were because it must have been a really slow day because this isn't this is a little off the usual beat. But I was curious about the writer of this episode and ended up tracking down his email. His name is Len Ulhi, and he wrote me back and was very happy to talk and remember this episode. He wrote a lot of cartoons. Like the guy, you know, if it was an animated series in the 90s,
did he write Garfield?
you pull up his IMDb.
Can you track him down again?
He wrote the famous episode.
I just need to talk to him.
And he...
Jim goes to confirmation classes.
His name's John, not Jim. Jim Davis is the author. John is the guy on the show.
Excuse me. You dumb shits.
You damn shits. This is like when I snapped at Jossie for not knowing Odie's name.
Oh my gosh.
Odie.
Kevin Garfield's super fan. Pardon me. All right, we can move on now.
I dragged him down. He was really great to talk to. He was super nice. One thing I remember about the conversation was him saying he turned in the first draft and they sent it back and they're like, we need more religion in this. You got to go deeper. Like, it wasn't like Christian enough for
it. Sounds like it wasn't a reflection of his worldview. It was just something that he was exploring.
I don't know if he'd put it. I think he would say like, yeah, it was kind of, he was interested in this.
Yeah.
But at least at that time, probably was not suit. And he also said he took issue with the YouTube video title, The Wolverine is a Christian title.
Oh, yeah.
He was like, I don't know if I go that far. He kind of felt like maybe it was like Wolverine was beginning a new chapter in his spiritual journey that didn't end up at full conversion yet. So don't get your heart hopes up about seeing Wolverine in heaven, because according to the writer of this episode, it's not. The deal wasn't sealed just yet.
We'll not see him there. When I watched this, my theory was that the X-Men show had gotten like hate from some kind of like Catholic, you know, parents of young children's group like, this is wrong, or this is like, you know, I don't know, demonic or something.
So they were throwing them a bone?
And this was like a response to get on the good side of the like religious right at the time.
Well, would a demonic show have a Catholic?
Catholic demon?
Would a demonic show literally in the same way as an episode of Seventh Heaven that we covered 3 weeks ago?
We have to talk about the ending.
Okay. Yeah. So, let me share the screen again. So, everything works out. The monastery burns down, unfortunately. But then they go back to the city, and Rogue's like, I don't know if I believe all this stuff.
Does he have a cup of shrimp with their ice cream? Sorry, I just noticed Gambit has a little.
He does. Yeah,
he always has
a little
shrimp
cocktail and ice cream.
You can take the man out of the bayou, but you can't take the bayou out of the man.
Gotta have shrimp on hand.
And they're talking like, I don't know if I believe all this stuff.
Deal you a full house or a busted flush?
So she's walking down the street.
It's storming up.
That's how we end every podcast record.
What if there is nothing else?
I will give thanks to you, O Lord.
She walks into a church.
Your anger turned away and you comforted me. I will trust and will not be afraid.
The little smile. I think everything's going to be all right.
I was like, what in the focus on the family is happening here? He's like kneeled at the altar of this beautiful, probably Catholic church, and he's reading the Bible aloud and like, yeah.
As one does. That's how you do it. That's how the truly devout.
It is so funny how much, in retrospect, Hugh Jackman sounds like him, too. Sounds like the voice. It sounds like Jackman's doing an impression of...
He's the greatest showman.
Of him, yeah. Which there is a great BTS story about that. Of originally, I forget the actor's name. It's the bad guy in Mission Impossible 2. That was supposed to be Wolverine in the first
Philip Seymour
X-Men.
Hoffman?
No. Oh, I'm mutant.
I can't remember his name.
Can you imagine? No, some guy. Oh, I forget
Rami
his name.
Rami Malek.
He would have been like 14. But they had to do reshoots for Mission Impossible 2, the least liked of all the Mission Impossibles. I can't remember this gentleman's name. And they like, scheduling conflicts. Okay, how about this Hugh Jackman guy?
Music theater guy.
Isn't that crazy?
At the time, wasn't like he wasn't an act. Like, nobody knew who he was. He was like some Australian soap opera guy, I think. And
no,
he got the lead part in this. Yeah.
So.
And now look how far his career has gone. He's playing Wolverine again.
Well, not anymore, because he has forsaken his wife.
Oh, no.
Yeah, he can't be a Catholic anymore.
His wife and his very normal marriage that I haven't heard a lot of weird stories about.
Normal stuff.
And stuff he does in New York City.
Caroline,
do you remember?
I will give thanks.
Caroline, we saw at least part of The Wolverine together. Do you remember this? 10 years ago at the $3 theater. On Colorado.
Mm.
Not
oh yeah, that,
not Logan, but The Wolverine, the rated R one.
I remember that well.
It's in like Japan, right?
Yeah, it's in Japan.
Yeah.
I was like gobsmacked by how weird and bad it was.
No, it was not fun.
There's something he does in that we were making fun of for like a long time afterward.
Does he say, "Somebody stop me"? What does he do? I don't remember.
Anyway, yeah, it was crazy.
But this episode ends with Wolverine saying, "I will give thanks to my God.
Oh, Lord.
I will." And Rogue's like, "All right, man, whatever makes you happy." Slowly backs out of the church. I'm wondering how many listeners we have that would also resonate with this portrayal. And it's so interesting, too, especially given the context of Tyler, you interviewing the writer, that felt pretty irreligious, mostly, or like...
Yeah, as I recall, and I have to go back, I hope I'm not misquoting him here, but I remember him saying he had like some religious conviction. He wasn't like a, you know, he was, I don't know if he would say he was one of the nuns or anything like that.
Right.
N-O-N-E-S, one of the nuns, but I think he felt like maybe this was probably not like a total reflection of where he was at personally on a spiritual level. Yeah.
It feels like,
I would say for a Saturday morning cartoon, probably about as intellectual as you'd want to go with an 8-year-old eating their Fruit Loops in their pajamas on Saturday morning. I don't think they're ready for much more Augustinian theology than that at that point.
You don't want to see a Nightcrawler being like, "Wolverine, have you heard of Tulip?" What accent am I doing?
Dracula.
Tulip.
Yeah.
I want to tell you about, well, I'm still thinking about how cool it'd be if Dracula was a Christian. Because it's trading in one blood for another. It's beautiful.
I mean, that was kind of Midnight Ass, you know?
That's true. His tight ass? Yeah.
Yeah, his tight ass.
Did you watch Midnight Mass, the Mike Flanagan show on Netflix?
Yeah, I watched it. I watched it. I liked it a lot.
That demon loved to be at that church.
He loved it.
He was in there all the time.
If I was a demon, that would be my move.
Oh, yeah.
It's a smart move. Go in, kind of like cosplay as a priest for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Get it all down, win him over. He just didn't play it right. Didn't play his cards right.
He was too greedy. He was too hasty.
Spoiler alert. Yeah. I guess.
And there was, you know, how like there's kind of creepy stories about the making of The Exorcist and other horror movies like that. There were some weird stories about the making of Midnight Mass where everyone got possessed with the demon of really long monologues. So every single scene, it's like, oh, this isn't even in the script. It's like five more minutes.
Let's go.
And then the editors were possessed with the demon of leaving it in.
I'm not editing. Woof.
There's a new one. Fall of the House of Usher. What's that?
The demon of leaving it in. That classic tempted, that classic sin that is in the Bible.
Whoa. I think a lot of people are guilty of the demon of leaving it in.
Thank God Emma is
good
not
Christian
afflicted.
Fun after dark situation.
Wait, there's a new Mike Flanagan scary series coming. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's a scary series, gang.
This is my American Horror Story. Like, I got to watch this.
He's like, what if American Horror Story was good? Yeah. Like, that's all his shows
for sure.
Are.
But so you're not a fan of the monologues, though.
It just bumped me in Midnight Mass, I think. And specifically that relationship between Saracen and what's her name? His wife. Flanagan's wife.
And the wife.
God damn it.
Damn.
Kate, I want to say.
Katie, wife?
I think Katie is right.
I still think about you imitating me on mushrooms at Taylor Swift and calling Laura Dern Mrs. Wife. Excuse me, Mrs. Wife. I think about that. Yeah, I thought they were a little long-winded. The Fall of the House of the Usher is...
No, I get you.
It's an adaptation of Edgar Allan Poe stuff. So we're going to get some Raven in there.
Fun.
We're going to get some Bruce Greenwood. It's going to be a good rollick and good time.
I can't wait.
We'll see if there's any Christian
I like him. I liked the Dr. Sleep movie that he did, too.
I did, too. I thought it was cool.
A lot of people didn't like it. I thought it was quite... I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too.
I watched it with a friend of mine who laughed out loud every time they showed Rebecca Ferguson in that top.
Yeah.
The hat.
Like she was about to start spreading the news.
Rebecca, don't listen. Don't listen, Rebecca.
Putting on
the hat.
The
was a good choice. I liked the hat.
I like that choice.
The hat plays.
I like the hat. Plays. Oh man, anything else we want to say about Wolverine becoming a Christian, about
Nightcrawler?
Well,
but he didn't, according to the writer.
He did not become a Christian, but he's definitely curious. He's experimenting.
Yeah, he's spiritually curious.
Yeah.
The only other thing that doesn't really come across in the cartoon or in the movie, he was played in the movie by Alan Cummings, where he's also, there's like a lot of Catholic, he's sort of depicted as a very devout, but in the comics, he's also like super fun. Like he's one of the few X-Men who seems like he really kind of enjoys his life.
He's not tortured.
He likes to have fun. He likes to flirt. He kind of sees himself as like a Clark Gable type. He idolizes old movie stars and styles himself after them.
Oh, weird.
And I think as a kid, seeing somebody who was both like very religious, but also had a lot of fun and didn't feel like either you had to choose between one or the other. I don't know if that I saw that anywhere else in pop culture or anything quite like that. And that was very affirming to me. And I felt like I probably saw something that I at least wanted to be, maybe not, I don't know if I would call it representation, but I would call it like aspirational in a way that very few other religious figures were in my pop culture diet at that time.
I get that. Cause it's like what you're talking about is just a little model of something that's, it's not even, I'm going to reshape my life to try to become this thing or be this person, but just that this is a possibility, right, and a potential path, and
right,
that there's latitude for personality of performance and individuality and your own character and color to shine through in the way that you're talking about, that it's not the idea of faith as a flavor enhancer rather than a flavor killer, I guess,
exactly,
in the way that you're talking about it is interesting.
Exactly.
And something I find so interesting that it's so frequently portrayed and depicted by people who don't have any buy-in to the quote-unquote church in the way that we're talking about. When the people who are striving, like, you know, talking the Irwin brothers or whoever the hell, like, oh, we wanted this to be a three-dimensional blah, 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 blah. And it isn't. Usually it's
it never
not,
is.
Right? and then you find it in Saturday morning cartoons or Damon Lindelof
shows. A single episode of a Saturday morning cartoon, yeah. Or, yeah, I guess some Lindelof stuff. Yeah, sure. And that was... That was probably just as a kid, and I'm not saying that this is probably going to change any of the very mature grown up listeners of Good Christian Fun's life to go back and see this now.
It's
probably fair to say that at that time it felt like I was giving me a level of permission that I probably wasn't getting from anywhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I'm grateful for that.
Well, I do feel like it's very Christian for him to be into old pop culture that's, like, probably clean.
Oh, what, like the Clark Gable stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
No sex in a Gable movie.
Oh, I love babes like Rosalind Russell.
Yeah. Like, he's not going to be into, like, Buffy.
Maybe that's why his village seems so from, like, the 1800s compared to everything else. Maybe that's
he wanted it to
as
be
far
like
as it's
he's just old-fashioned. Yeah.
All right, well, gang, let's wrap it up. Let's give it a roaster toast. Holy toast is a thumbs up. We send it to heaven. Where Nightcrawler's been before, so no bigness to him.
How much would that suck if you like went to heaven and then all of a sudden God's like, you're not yet. So like you get just long enough to like figure out
turn
how cool
around
heaven is, and then you gotta go back and keep it up.
Literally, that's a whole season of Buffy, the aforementioned Buffy.
Oh, that's that's
if
true.
If we remember that. Holy roast, we send it to hell. Or purgatory, which is the space between. I'm so vulnerable doing this all where Caroline can see the computer too. And she can also see a playlist that says Caroline interview.
Oh, yeah. Is that what you fed the AI in order to make me say, like, eat my butt or something? No, bitch. These are my clips. My clip show.
That wasn't AI. That was you.
It was organic. Holy toast. You know, Wolverine, Nightcrawler, I will see you in heaven, my boys. We will meet again.
On the other side.
I thought this was really fun. And It's not super relevant, but I thought the colors and the styling of this show are so fun and beautiful and, you know, vibrant. We didn't talk about how Rogue is absolutely stacked. I was like, this is...
Oh, I didn't even notice.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
This is a content warning for Saturday morning. Oh, my gosh.
That's all X-Men women. We're talking like watermelons. It's just like...
Watermelons. And then like constantly arching their backs, like whatever position they happen to be in. I was like, good Lord.
I just thought to tell you what you needed, like if you were a superhero. If you were a girl, you'd be a superhero. It just came with the territory. It's
the battle stance. You got to have those and like long legs. Anyway, but yeah, I thought it was really fun. I enjoyed it a lot. And I could see like totally being into this if I had, like, if this has caught me when I was a child, I would have loved it.
I would turn to Tyler.
Oh, yeah. I'll be Nightcrawler for you after. I'll be seeing you in heaven, my friend. Wolverine, I hope you join us. Gambit, it is too late for you. And,
Gambit, don't bother.
Don't worry. I like it where it's hot and swampy down there.
They got plenty of shrimp.
Holy toast as well. I actually agree with you, Caroline. There's something about the art style that made me feel safe watching it. The not quite 24 frames a second artwork and that version of...
Hand-drawn.
It felt 80s, but it was literally 90s. It was like 1995, 94, 95, I want to say.
You get the impression the budget was a little... They spent a lot of money on those voice actors. Didn't leave a whole lot left over for the cell frame rate.
You can hear the money in the voice.
I really hope they carry all the Christian themes on into the reboot series that's coming out next year. Like the first scene of the first episode of the new one is him getting off his knees in the church, like, all right.
Amen.
That's kind of what launches it.
In Jesus' name,
I pray to you. See, I can't even do it. Oh, man. Very good.
That's so funny. Don't. 65 inches. Yeah. Sucks a lot.
I don't know what that's from. All right, we're bringing it down now. We're dimming the lights. We're lighting the candles in here. Tyler, another show you might promote yourself or plug your projects. We're not here to do that. We're here to lift them up to the Lord, including something in the secular culture, the last great thing we watched, saw, read, listened to, etc. Mm-hmm. We'll start with Caroline.
You can lift me up at Caroline Sparts. I'm on Threads. I'm on it. I'm
Gretchen,
not posting.
Gretchen's trying to make Threads happen.
Yeah, I'm trying to make Threads happen. Tyler, are you on Threads?
No.
You're off Twitter, though, no?
I'm off, yeah. Blue Sky. I'm a Blue Sky guy.
Blue Sky.
I'm on Blue Sky.
Is it popping on Blue Sky?
No, I just tweet about every dream I have.
Okay, I'm definitely staying off. Unfollowed.
I have some pretty good dreams on there. I'm going to read them.
I got to see The Haunting in... Is it in Venice or of Venice?
A Haunting in Venice.
In Venice, I think. In Venice, the new Poirot joint.
Uh-huh.
It was really fun. I liked it a lot. I had a great time. Tina Fey has like cornered this character of being like a true crime fan. Like she did the same thing in Only Murders in the Building. Who's kind of like preying on real people's problems. It's very funny. But yeah, it was great. I had a good time. So if you're looking for something to go see, even with your family, and a little bit of religion in there too, gotta say.
There is. Okay, now we're talking.
Oh, yeah. Oh man.
Yeah.
Oh,
run,
baby.
Run, don't walk.
Get in your gondola to go see.
I absolutely will. All right. We turn it to... By the way, that last one, Death on the Nile, starring Armie Hammer and Russell Brand. Those are two actors in Death on the Nile.
Can you imagine?
They did not know.
Cursed.
All eyes on Gal.
Gal. Only Gal can save us now.
All right, we turn to Tyler.
I recently finished... a novel called Gone to the Wolves. It's by John Ray. It is set in the metal scene, the nascent metal scene in Florida in the late 80s and early 90s. I'm not a big metal guy, but I really, really enjoyed the book a lot. My wife Liz recommended it to me, and I enjoyed the depiction of like kind of finding yourself in a subculture as a teenager, and how affirming that is, and also how strange it can be, and also the like kind of the weird ways that can manifest as you grow up, as you change and the scene doesn't. And I thought that was very, it was very smart about how I explored at least for me, as somebody who doesn't know anything about metal. So a true metalhead might read this and feel like they got it wrong, but I liked it a lot. And it was the best thing I've read probably so far this year.
Wow.
I know you say you're not a big metal guy, but you know who is? The Iron Giant.
What
the fuck?
Go to bed. Are you sleeping? Are you drinking water?
Yes.
Are you holding out your hand for a high five or for a pill?
Handshake. I thought I was going to get the Hollywood handshake from Caroline.
You're getting medication. Lord. Were you sitting on that the whole time?
But I was
listening
but
to
I
him?
Was listening at the same time. It's about identity and
I'm sorry, Tyler.
I was shocked.
I'm going to look that book up.
I was surprised that I was here for that, but it's okay. It was good. I do love the Iron Giant.
Tyler, where can people find you online? I'll take
you
over.
You can find me on Blue Sky. I'm at Tyler Huckabee on Blue Sky.
Beautiful. Kevin, your turn.
That's about it.
Can you do this?
Yes. What do you mean, can I do this?
What is the Iron Giant?
The Iron Giant?
I know what it is. What is it? I'm kidding.
Go. We all love the Iron Giant. We love the Iron Giant. And they indicted me. You can lift me up at Kevin T. Porter everywhere. I'll lift up a movie called Prisoners. Have you? Speaking of Wolverine, starring Wolverine.
Yeah. Hugh Jackman's in it. Yeah,
and he plays a Christian man who does some things that are maybe not so Christian in the movie.
You got Jake Gyllenhaal in that. You got what's his name?
Good Gyllenhaal in that movie.
Great Gyllenhaal.
Man,
top tier Gyllenhaal.
It was 2.5 hours. And I got through it in one sitting at home, which is unusual.
Whoa.
That's early Denis, right? That's like pre-sci-fi Denis. Yeah.
Denis Villeneuve. Very good movie. And yeah, there's just some Christian stuff in there. Lift us up at Christian Fun Pod everywhere. Patreon.com/goodchristianfun for more good Christian fun. And leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Why don't you? Tyler, thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Huck. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me. I was surprised that I pitched an X-Men episode and you guys went for it. So I appreciate that and happy to keep it. We'll come back when the new... when they come back with this new season, we'll see if there's any good Christian content on there.
Yeah, when Professor Xavier becomes a youth pastor in the new series, we'll do an episode.
He got it.
Finally lets that hair grow out a little bit. Yeah. It's a nice little youth pastor cut.
He has a goatee for some reason. It looks bad.
Low-key alcoholic.
And there's nothing left to say except for, okay
I love you, Emma. Amen.
Now watch this drive. Tyler, what CCM song of your choosing should we go out on in this episode?
How about feeling a little Switchfoot?
A little Bare Necessities?
Yeah. Does that count as a CCM? I guess it does. It counts as a CCM song with an icon like Stephen Curtis. Sure, we can do Bare Necessities.
We're going to go out with the CCM song, Bare Necessities.
The bare necessities of life. Wherever I wander.
All right, and we'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
I couldn't be found off my big home. The bees are buzzing in the tree to make some honey just for me. When you look under the rocks and plants and take a glance at the fence.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.